cloning Google Titan 2FA keys, facial recognition is being used to identify rioters, and a SolarWinds update. All that coming up now on ThreatWire. Greetings, I am Shannon Morse, and this is ThreatWire for January 12th, 2021. This is your summary of the threats to our security, privacy, and internet freedom. On to the news. Researchers at Ninja Lab publicized a research paper demonstrating how they were able to clone Google Titan security keys due to a vulnerability allowing for side channel attacks. The vulnerability in question is CVE-2021-3011, and it can allow an attacker to steal an encryption key or the ECDSA private key, which has been linked to somebody's account on a U2F physical hardware token, like a Google Titan. Now, this is really neat because the chips embedded within hardware tokens are often touted to be the best of the best when it comes to online account authentication, since an attacker would actually need the physical key plus your account credentials in order to gain access. But in this case, they could clone the physical device. Assuming that an attacker also had account credentials, they could use this attack to gain access. Now, this does affect several different devices, including the Google Titan, the Yubico YubiKey Neo, several tokens from Facian, I think that's how you say it, and several NXP Java card chips. But before you throw out your hardware token and never use 2FA again, please don't do that. Don't worry, you likely are not going to be targeted in this attack because it is somewhat expensive and it does require a lot of time, like a full workday at least. So an attacker would need your account credentials. They would also need to steal your hardware token without you noticing. If they are able to do that, they would also need to buy about $12,000 worth of equipment to allow them to take apart the hardware token using things like nitric acid to get to the embedded chips within the epoxy shell and hope that they don't damage the components in the process. Now, the attacker would need access to the NXP A700X chip that does the elliptic curve cryptography to keep your private key secret, along with the chip that transfers data between the USB or the NFC interface and the little authentication microcontroller. Now, attackers could study electromagnetic radiations coming off of that little teeny tiny NXP chip using a side channel attack in order to discover the encryption key. That radiation signature is part of the cryptographic operation that happens whenever devices like these are registered with a new account. Not including the slow physical process of taking apart the key, actual collection of data took a good 6 hours. Eventually, a malicious actor could figure out your private key based on that forensic evidence. So again, I think it is a really cool study of how the physical chips could be vulnerable to an attack. But likeliness that this would actually happen to you is pretty minimal, especially if you protect your physical key. I would likely notice if my Titan security key was missing for over 6 hours myself, especially if it's returned and it looks like it was tampered with. If you are someone who could be targeted in this kind of attack and you notice that your key is missing, you can revoke your key's access through your online account security settings and you can switch to a new key as a backup. Now, you can read the entire research paper, which is linked down below in the description. It has been a couple of weeks as well, so I do have a couple of new folks to welcome to the ThreatWire Alliance over on Patreon. I did want to give a shout out to Pat Morgan 235, Andreas K, Enrique T, Michael L, EMCP 333, Paul D, Louis C, Dennis S, Jessica L, Drew, Doug B, Orlando A, Dan H, Timothy A, Bizarro Rollins, Karen G, Vladimir, Willie W, and JR. As always, you can find all of the perks, including those shoutouts, over on the ThreatWire Patreon page. Thank you so much, patrons. I appreciate you. On Wednesday, January 6th, hundreds of protesters breached the Capitol in DC, roaming the halls, destroying government items, and stealing electronic items of significance, including laptops. Now, if treated similarly to other physical breaches, then in a worst-case scenario, cybersecurity professionals would assume that any current passwords, sensitive documents, or data could have been stolen. And as we have learned from Hollywood, and Hack 5, you only need a short period of time and access to a computer in order to infect it with malware using a simple USB drive. Fake power strips, Wi-Fi routers, or iPhone cables could have been left behind, and yes, all of these do exist in real life. Since Congress went back to work the same evening within the same building after the mob was removed, they could be using compromised devices. Cybersecurity professionals are recommending full wipes and rotating credentials just in case, since the full scope of operational, digital, and physical security breaches is currently unknown. Of course, planning this type of attack would require some research, but anyone with a little bit of social engineering know-how could blend in with the crowd and get into the building. Due to the acts of violence, law enforcement and lawmakers have responded in a couple of different ways. First, Senator Mark Warner, Democrat of Virginia and incoming Senate Intelligence Committee Chair, sent a letter to several companies who generally comply with court-issued preservation orders of data, specifically Facebook, T-Mobile, Verizon, Apple, AT&T, Google, Gab, Parler, Signal, Telegram, and Twitter. He requested that these companies preserve whatever data that they have from that day's events in order to help piece together what happened and the perpetrators involved. That includes data such as messages to and from participants. The CEO of Clearview AI, which is a company contracted to implement their facial recognition technology in businesses and organizations, explained that they saw a 26% spike in usage on January 7th, the day after the riot. According to reports, police departments in various parts of the U.S. are using Clearview to identify the faces of people seen in the images taken at Capitol Hill. After drawing a lot of attention last year, Clearview did say they would stop the sales of their technology to private businesses, but they are making that available to law enforcement. Lastly, according to authorities, data is being collected and analyzed from the Capitol's own networks. So if a rioter did not turn off their device's radios like we do when we go to DEF CON, and they automatically connected to the guest Wi-Fi or cell phone towers within the building's infrastructure, then that data would be collected. While many thought that these perpetrators got away free from prosecution, some have already been arrested just days later due to the massive collection of forensic evidence such as facial recognition and data capture. Events like this one could cause more surveillance in more spaces, not just within the walls of a government building. Folks may praise the government's use of technology to catch these criminals, but this same kind of technology has historically been used to track and target a very different group of people. I wanted to give a big shout out to my Hush Puppy Perk Level patrons for sharing their fur baby photos and for the support, and to all of my Patreon patrons who have continued to support the show. Now on to story number three. A lot has been surfacing about the SolarWinds hack. So since I have not reported on this giant debacle since before Christmas, because I took a couple of weeks off for once in my life, this report will hopefully catch you up with everything that has happened since then. We learned at the end of December that the SolarWinds hack also affected several critical infrastructure networks, about 15 total for electric, oil, and manufacturing industries, along with three firms that provide services for these industries, which are called OEMs, or Original Equipment Manufacturers. Since OEMs usually have some kind of privileged access to networks to push software installations, control operations, etc., disruptions can occur in the event of an attack. OEMs tend to work with multiple organizations, so an attack that affects one OEM could be cause for a potential attack vector to many other companies that they work with. More comes to light as time passes with this attack, with a joint statement being issued by CISA, the FBI, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, which is called the ODNI, and the NSA, saying, quote, "This work indicates that an advanced persistent threat, an APT actor, likely Russian in origin, is responsible for most or all of the recently discovered ongoing cyber compromises of both government and non-governmental networks." They also stated the investigation is ongoing and that it was a targeted assault. 18,000 installed the malicious backdoor update, while a much smaller amount was actually accessed by the attackers. Soon to be, at time of recording, former President Trump has blamed China while Russia denies being involved. The U.S. Department of Justice released a statement last week explaining that attackers gained access to their Office 365 system, and they accessed both sent and received emails for about 3% of their accounts, of which the DOJ has about 100,000 employees. So 3% is kind of a lot. This breach does require the agency to notify Congress, since it is considered a major incident. Because of the ongoing investigation, the federal court system has chosen to take sensitive documents completely offline. Any highly sensitive documents will now have to be accepted for filing in paper format or via secure electronic devices, like a flash drive stored in a standalone PC and not uploaded, which sounds kind of like an air-gapped method. Now, these docs contain explanations of how investigations happen and people that are currently under surveillance, the kind of information that needs to stay secure during an investigation. As research into the SolarWinds hack continues, researchers at Kaspersky have identified many code signatures that link Sunburst, which is the nickname for this hack, to Turla, which is a Russian-speaking APT known since the early 2010s. That includes a sleeping algorithm, usage of a particular hash, and an algorithm used to generate unique IDs for victims, according to a secure list report. The code is not exactly the same, but there does exist to be a slight overlap. SolarWinds released a statement last week saying that they hired former CISA chief Chris Krebs, along with former Facebook CSO Alex Stamos, to help the company respond to the attack and work on security improvements. The new acting director of CISA, his name is Brandon Wales, he explained yesterday that we would likely see the number of confirmed agencies that were breached increase as the investigation continues. The CISA team is currently working on developing stronger structure around government networks to protect from further breaches. Wales is the interim director, and we currently have no confirmation of who will take over CISA for the Biden administration. Do you want to see more tech videos from me? Make sure to check out my YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/ShannonMorse, just like my name is spelled, for everything from tech reviews to security tutorials. And with that, do not forget to like and subscribe. I'm Shannon Morse, and I will see you on the internet. We'll be right back.